So we got down to Bhagavad Akramichi Mala. In his book Bhagavad Akramichi Mala, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur counts this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 5, within the Sambandha division, assigning it to Chapter 5 entitled Bhagavat Shakti Tattvam, the essential nature of the energies of the Lord. Brahma to Narada. The illusory energy of the Lord cannot take precedence, being ashamed of her position. But those who are bewildered by her always talk nonsense, being absorbed in thoughts of it is I and it is mine. So this is essential nature. So as discussed before, is that she has a thankless task, so that's the way she is, and one under her control, or let's say influence, then thinks it is I, it is mine, because this is the concept that I am God. So I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. Right? So anyone in Maya always thinks like this, I and mine. Right? So that's the principle that we see here. So this is essential nature. Right? So this doesn't go away. So if we understand that, then all other things we add on top of that. Right? So it's because all our problems in dealing basically stem from this I and mine. We get rid of this concept of I and mine, that instead of I am God, I am servant, and it's not mine, it's Krishna's, then everything else corrects itself. Then you're not under Maya anymore. Then you're under the internal potency. Yeah? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur counts this verse from Canto 2, Chapter 5, within the Sambandha section of Bhagavat Akramrichi Mala, Chapter 4, entitled Bhagavat Sarup Tattva, the factual truth of Krishna. Right? Because you're going to, Sambandha means you have to know Krishna, the Jiva, and and his energies. Right? And so, him being here, Bhagavat Sarup Tattva, the factual truth of Krishna, what is his position? Right? So, and everything. So Brahma to Narad Muni. The five elementary ingredients of creation, the interaction thereof set up by eternal time, and the intuition or nature of the individual living beings are all different parts and parcels of the personality of Godhead, Vasudev, and in truth there is no other value in them. Right? So he's saying is that whatever there is in the factual truth of Krishna is everything is coming from Krishna, and it's only meaning is its connection to Krishna. There's no other meaning. Does that make sense? So if that's understood, because this is Sambandha, then all your other activities, your goals, everything will be based on that. Does this make sense? So it's essential point that we understand that if it's not connected to Krishna, everything's coming from Krishna, and its only value is its connection to Krishna. So in other words, Krishna is of value, and what's not connected to him is of no importance. Does that make sense? In the same chapter, 4, Bhagavat Sup Tattva, the factual truth of Krishna, of Bhagavat Akramichi Mala, the Thakur includes this verse from Bhagavatam Canto 2, Chapter 5. The Supreme Lord is pure spiritual form, transcendental to all material qualities. Yet for the sake of the creation of the material world and its maintenance and annihilation, he accepts through his external energy the material modes of nature called goodness, passion, and ignorance. Right? So it's telling actually his position. He's in control of the material energy. He's not affected by the material energy. And for the sake of creation, maintenance, and disillusion. So that means for the sake of us, he actually does this, right? In the spiritual world, you don't need to create or destroy. It always exists. But for those jivas who decide to turn their face from Krishna, then you have to have a beginning and end, because if it's not connected to Krishna, who's eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, then it has to be the opposite. Right? So that means it's temporary, full of ignorance, and full of pain. So therefore, beginning, middle, and end has to be there. Right? It's already there in activities, but those activities are eternal. But here, even that process of samandhavidaya prayojan is temporary here. Does that make sense? Any activity, it itself disappears. Does that make sense? Okay, so that's Krishna's. So he deals with this, but not directly himself, through his energy, but he's still in control. You know, just like the minister of the government may have secretary, or the prime minister is there and he has ministers that gets work done. He doesn't do it directly, but he does it through them. These verses from Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 5, are counted by the Thakur within the Sambandha section of Bhagavat Arkamrichimala, Chapter 10, Achintya Bheda Bheda Lakshana, or characteristics of the inconceivable oneness and difference. Brahmati Narad Muni. After the incarnation of the first Purusha, Karana Daksha Vishnu, the Mahat Tattva, or the principles of material creation, take place, and then time is manifest. And in course of time, the three qualities appear. Nature means the three qualitative appearances. They transform into activities. Material activities are caused by the Mahat Tattvas being agitated. At first, there is transformation of the modes of goodness and passion, and later, due to the mode of ignorance, matter. Means, in other words, that there's transformation because of goodness and passion, but the gross manifestation is because of ignorance. Then you get the gross, the pancha mahabhutas. Its knowledge and different activities of material knowledge come into play. So here also we see its knowledge and different activities of material knowledge come into play, because there is the overlap here, as we remember, is that ignorance is sambandha. Right? It's the sambandha of the material world. It's based on ignorance. It means it's not connected to Krishna. And the gross forms of it. So within sambandha you have knowledge. You sambandha jnana. So that's the higher. All of these things, everything in the Vedic, it has its topmost platform, and then it has lower, like we said, the adi-atmic, the adi-bhautic, and adi-atmic, adi-bhautic, adi-daivic. Excuse me. Well, in this case, we go adi-atmic, adi-daivic, adi-bhautic, right? So then, you always have that understanding, connection with the Lord, and then you have that understanding with the metaphysics and the personalities of the universe. Then it has your own, you know, your particular world, you know, and the things and interactions of that world. Does that make some sense? Right? It means you have the spirit, what's going on? Krishna is controlling everything. Then you have the demigods controlling it. Then you have yourself as the one that's, you know, turning on the stove and putting things in the pot and all that. But behind that, that you can see there's a demigod. They can move your hand, there's a demigod. That there's a vegetable there's a demigod. Right? So, but, and behind that demigod, then there's Krishna. Does that make sense? So you have all those. So, therefore, even though it seems that in ignorance comes this knowledge, but that's knowledge, that's the material world. Right? Does that make sense? And the different activities of material knowledge, it means what you can do. It doesn't mean they're being done. Does that make sense? You have a knife, you have a cutting board, you have a potato. So that's the sambandha. So the knife can cut the potato, the board holds the potato up so that it can get cut. You know, the potato is cut. So all that's, but it hasn't happened. That's what it does. When you actually do it, that's abhideya. But having the knowledge of how it works, that's there. You know, otherwise if you put the knife down, put the potato on the knife, and pick up the cutting board and start smashing the potato, your sambandha jnana is not well developed. You know? Does that make sense? The self-centered materialistic ego, being thus transformed into three features, becomes known as the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance in three divisions. Namely, the powers that evolve matter, knowledge of material creations, and the intelligence that guides such materialistic activities. Narad, you are quite competent to understand this. Self-centered materialistic ego being thus transformed into three features. That's important, is that these three features are the, technically would be the Shankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. Because you have the mind, the false ego of the mind, Aniruddha, the false ego of Prajumna, which is intelligence of senses, and the false ego of Shankarshan, which is the gross matter that you identify with. Right? So it's the matter and that identification with that. Does that make sense? So in this case, you put Prajumna into the active point as the abhideya, or the perversion of the chit potency, or the mode of passion here, in that knowledge in the senses, because the knowledge is the chit potency is knowledge and activities. Right? So that mode of passion means there should be some knowledge by which you're performing an activity. Does that make sense? Okay? But that's already gone before, is because of the Mahatattva is being agitated, because Vasudeva, that polluted consciousness is the overall. When that becomes transformed into these three kinds of false ego, then the living entity actually in the material world performs activities based on this. So then when you perform the activity, that's the Vasudeva aspect, and these other three support. Right? But within here, we're talking about the self-centered materialistic ego is transformed into three features. So it means the self-centered materialistic ego means I am God. It's I and mine. That's self-centered materialistic. That's the Vasudeva. That's the Mahatattva. Right? Does that make sense? So you have the original false ego that I am separate from God. I am God. That then gets three subdivisions. Right? Then those four work together. So that's why if you change, you don't have to, the other ones you don't have to worry. You change the Vasudeva one of I am servant of God, then automatically the other three become brought into line. Because they come from, because Vasudeva, then Sankarshan, then Prajumna and Aniruddha. They expand like that. So then if you change Vasudeva, the effect of Sankarshan, Prajumna and Aniruddha, though still dealing with material elements, will be give you a spiritual result. Does that make sense? From the darkness of false ego, the first of the five elements, namely the sky, is generated. Its subtle form is the quality of sound, exactly as the seer is in relationship with the seen. Because the sky is transformed, the air is generated with the quality of touch. By previous succession, the air is also full of sound and the basic principles of duration of life. Sense perception, mental power, and bodily strength. When air is transformed in the course of time and nature's course, fire is generated, taking shape with the sense of touch and sound. Since fire is also transformed, there is a manifestation of water, full of juice and taste. As previously, it also has form and touch, and also full of sound. And water, being transformed from all variegatedness on earth, appears odorous, and as previously, becomes qualitatively full of juice, touch, sound, and form, respectively. So it's all expanding. Each one expands, has the qualities of the ones before it. Like that. So even though the earth is grossest, it has all those qualities. Right? So everything is balanced. You don't get this thing that's all this or all that. All good, all bad. Right? The Vedic thing is, we take a dog. Someone's character, he's like a dog. It's low, but at the same time, as there are qualities to learn from dogs. Right? Like that. You know, their loyalness, like this, their satisfaction with whatever you give them to eat, like that. These kind of things are, I mean, is that they can wake up immediately and be active, you know, like that. These are qualities that we have to learn from dogs. These are important human qualities. Right? And then, or a crow, right? But the crows, the quality you learn from them is you never see their nest. You never see them nesting. You just don't. You see them eating garbage, but you don't see them nesting. Think about it. It's not something you see. So that's a quality to learn from them. So Krishna's arranged that there's no such thing as only good or only bad, because they go together. You know, if you have light, that means there has to be darkness. There are darkness, there must be light. Does that make sense? So, therefore, is all of these things, they have their qualities, but then others have other, you know, something that balances it. So this whole section here is then showing the Achinta Veda Veda Tattvas, that it's coming from Krishna, it still has the nature like Krishna, but it's been transformed. So simultaneously one, but it's different. You understand? Krishna Satchitananda, that means everything in the cosmic creation works on those fundamental principles of Satchitananda. But the material becomes transformed so it acts like goodness, passion, and ignorance. as opposed to Satchitananda. Like that? Does that make sense? So it's not different. This, the idea that the world is different from God is an illusion. But it is different in that it's inferior. It is His energy, and it's inferior energy. Does that make some sense? Okay. Then these are all verses that we've gone through already, and all that. No. I don't know how you do this. So these next ones that we've discussed about how Maya's ashamed before the Lord, and everything is coming from the Lord, and non-different from the Lord, and that the social body is also representing the Lord. So Daiva Varnashram means you understand the Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras in their connection to the Lord. As his mouth, arms, legs, so then it becomes daiva. If you don't see it in that, it's regular, or just we just call it varnashram. Technically, it's called asuric varnashram. But just to not make anyone feel bad, then it's just called varnashram. Okay, then you have the homework assignments. Like that. Is there anything to you want to describe on this? Is there something to understand? It's self-explanatory. Yeah, it means these essays is that the whole point is we're working on what's called you have continuous assessment. So that is done by basically. To some degree by participation if you're here, but participation mainly is these essays. So the essays then show that you've done the work and it's understood, right? And then at the end, ultimately the end of the canto, then there'll be a test, right? And so the essays are all part of the thing. I think they're like 60% of the one's grade, if not more, like that. I think it's Bombay, you know, so they're very efficient in trying to get to them. Okay, so we'll turn it off this time. So then, moving on to chapter 6.
I'd like to start this because this introduction is quite involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Purusha Shukta is very involved.
So this is second canto, chapter 6. In this chapter, there are no questions and answers. The pratigya, which means the solemn statement of purpose, of this chapter, entitled Purusha Shukta Confirmed, is nicely expressed in paragraph from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 28. Note that with these words of comment on the prayer of Brahma in this chapter of the Bhagavatam, His Divine Grace could just as well purport the Purusha Shakti hymn of the Rig Veda. That's a particular relevance, like, to the students here at school, because they learn Purusha Shakti. You may or may not know it, but by knowing this chapter, then, and seeing how we explain it here, even if you don't know the Purusha Shukta or haven't read it or haven't read a translation, you'll know what it's about. Because when I went through this, I found very... I first of all began this, you know, doing this first canto by following the study guide of another devotee. And then when I reached this chapter, I remember I saw in his study guide, he wrote, it's unclear what this chapter has to do with the Purusha Shukra. And I said, wait a minute. And then that's when I started to expand the study guide more. That actually started here with this chapter. So let's hear what Srila Prabhupada's purport says. This is like, again, essential commentary on both this chapter and the Purusha Shukta hymn. Brahma, the original living being within the material world, taught us the way of sacrifice. The word sacrifice suggests dedication of one's own interests for the satisfaction of a second person. That is the way of all activities. Every man is engaged in sacrificing his interests for others, either in the form of family, society, community, country, or the entire human society. But perfection of such sacrifices is obtained when they are performed for the sake of the Supreme Person, the Lord. Because the Lord is the proprietor of everything, because the Lord is the friend of all living creatures, and because he is the maintainer of the performer of sacrifice, as well as the supplier of ingredients of sacrifices, it is he only and no one else who should be satisfied by all sacrifices. So we've gone through this very technical material before, the last chapter in particular, as someone said yesterday, I think. This is a very difficult chapter for me to understand. Well, that was all Sambandhagyan. So Sambandhagyan is principles. I said this is how the Vedic education works. Always the principles, that you could say, the theoretical principles, meaning what you have to understand in your intelligence, they have to be presented first, because this is, as Prabhupada said, the logic of Vedic knowledge is deductive, you see. Deductive, it's not inductive. Inductive means you know, by experience, you put things together, maybe this fits here, this fits there, and you build something up, and then it falls apart. Well, I guess that didn't work, and then you try this. And so the material scientists just go on and on and on like that. But deductive knowledge begins with the conclusion actually being presented in the beginning. But the difficulty here is that, you know, we have little Kali Yuga brains, so there's a nice expression, we can't get our minds around the principles. It's harder for us, you see. But now we're coming with chapter 6 to the practice, you see. Now we're going to, hopefully, you'll be able to see how all this theoretical knowledge fits together in the... Why are they yakking up there like that? Some of the flock of ducks. Anyway, so now this will help us get our minds around it, because this is more practical. You see, in what Srila Prabhupada wrote here, you can actually pick out what we've learned before, but now it's being put together, you see, in a active form. The center is sacrifice. So, 6.2, Chapter 6, Purusha Sukta confirmed Adhyaya Prakashika, the chapter at a glance. So I note in the Nimesha that this is a bit more than a chapter at a glance, because this chapter is anyway very detailed. So there's a logical structure underneath. And so sometimes in these Adhyaya Prakashikas, I'm trying to help the student see the foundation, the logical foundation, because upon it, in particular chapters, there's so much detail built up. And so it's good to, you know, if you're if you feel a little left behind, then it's good to like read this such an Adhyaya Prakashika a few times, you know, so that you pick up the essence before you go on into all the particular details. So, the Purusha Shukti hymn is composed of Vedic mantras that are to be sung in glorification of the Mahapurush and his Virat Rupa. Nimesha, Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 11, Summary Description of the Mahapurush, depicts this form of the Lord most wonderfully. That's just what, that's called Sangati. It's within the Bhagavatam. We're just connecting, showing you where there's another reading that's very much like this one. But because it's at the end of the Bhagavatam and this is the beginning, therefore that description is kind of, you know, looking back, really, hopefully, by that time, got a taste for the glories of Krishna. So it's sort of summing up again, going back to the same subject matter of the universal form, but not, it's very, very florid and beautiful, and you know, you can really get some taste. It's actually showing you, yes, you can even get a taste of the universal form if you're Krishna conscious. So, going on. In this chapter 6 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Brahmadev recites prayers in confirmation of the fact that the Purusha Shukti hymn addresses the great Purusha Mahavishnu, together with the two later Purushas, forms non-different from him, Garbhodaksha Vishnu and Paramatma. Nimesha, in other words, Brahma confirms here with his declaration, Narayana Praveda, from the previous chapter. The Vedic hymns are meant to glorify Lord Narayan only. You see, we're again referring back to show how all this is fitting together now in Abhideya, some practical activity. So he begins by filling in the connecting dots between the Virat's display of archetypical macrocosmic sense organs and the microcosmic senses of the living entities in the universe. You remember, a while ago Maharaj discussed this, there was that statement that Brahmagyan is there to help us understand the jivas, you know, our individual similarity with the Lord. If we don't understand that, then we can't say we can't truthfully say aham brahmasmi, you see, because we don't know what Brahman is. That's the mistake the Mayavadi have. They think Brahman is just this vast single light of self-consciousness, and I am the whole thing. There's only one self. This is actually a well-known form of insanity. So we don't want to go insane. So here we're learning what aham brahmasmi means in practical and personal terms, in terms of relationship with the Lord. So, Nimesha, that the material body of each conditioned soul in creation replicates in a small way the sensory facilities of the cosmic form of the Lord will be clearly pointed out by Srila Prabhupada in the purport from an upcoming chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 8, purport of verse 8, in which he states, in the creation of the material world, the Supreme Lord undoubtedly assumes a gigantic body, and living entities also get bodies, big or small, according to necessity. So, the Lord's body, the whole universe, is the original archetype of all other kinds of bodies. You see, we have this book, Vedic or Vedanta psychology. I give feedback that devotees really like it. So that's just really going into that point. Because body, there's a gross body and there's a subtle body. And actually, of the two, it's a subtle body that's moving the gross body. So the subtle body is really the important thing. And so, subtle body is can be karmatmika, means colored with fruitive desire, and then it pushes this body in such a way that we create more karma. But if the subtle body is purified, then our mind pushes us to serve Krishna. And that's the rasika mind. That means by its nature, you see, that's what we're working for in devotional service. Such a wonderful stage, just like now our mind may be spontaneously attracted to so many other things, and we're in this so-called probationary period of sadhana bhakti where we're trying to check that attraction. See, the eye starts to wander. Oh, you remember, no, I shouldn't do this. There's a rule against this. But when the mind is fully purified, then just like that, the mind, you know, is telling the eyes, look at Krishna. And telling all the senses, serve Krishna, chant the holy name here. This is wonderful. The mind is going, I like this, I like this. The mind is driving us towards Krishna. So, besides portioning out sensory faculties to the different grades of embodied souls, the Virat Purusha gives the living being shelter. Furthermore, all that any individual may attain in life, bad or good, lust, frustration, ignorance, and death, or on the other hand, religious principles, truth, and transcendent knowledge, is sourced in the Lord's great cosmic form. The Virat covers every created being in the universe as past, present, and future. Yet the Lord Himself is timeless and beyond all in creation. His personal form is transcendental and does not exceed 9 inches. That means
this is a measurement
of the heart.
Means according to the size of the person, put your hand like that, then that's how big he is in your body.
Okay, so an elephant could do that. Then we'd see the size of his soul in his heart, if he could do that.
Yeah.
So, yet, his personal form does not exceed 9 inches, yet, like the powerful sun in the sky, he maintains all below him by his powerful energies. His personal abode is the tripod vibhuti, the destination of those who, seeking immortality, do not yield to sensory impulses. Persons in family life, or those who break vows of celibacy, must take birth again in the ekapad vibhuti, the material manifestation. The Lord rules over both nescience and true knowledge, matter and devotional service alike. Everything in the universe comes from Him. Yet, as the sun is different from its rays, He remains aloof from His creation. Nimesha, it is noteworthy that the terms tripad and ekapad vibhuti are to be found in Purusha Shukta. See, that's why I got disturbed when I read that devotee. There is the relationship between the two seems to be unclear, and then he didn't say it anymore. But now, Brahma recounts his birth from the lotus flower that grew from the navel of Vishnu. He tells how, at that time, he made a sacrifice. He made sacrificing using only the limbs of the subtle Virat, since there was nothing else to be offered in Asia. This, the first of all Vedic Yajnas, is the focus of the Purusha Sukta hymn. That hymn is actually describing that very first Yajna. Then, after Brahma, 9 leading personalities among the sages and demigods performed this Yajna, etc. This chapter goes on to describe. After Brahma's first leading yajna, then others did. And in this way, the whole, you see, starting from the most subtle, because as you must know from Krishna book, it's only Brahma among all the demigods who by meditation can directly visualize the form of the Lord. And so all these other personalities have to follow after Brahma. You see, they have to see what he did, and then they do. Because they do not have, they can see the jyoti streaming out perhaps from the form of the Lord, but that form they cannot see. So until Brahma shows them, they don't know how to perform the sacrifice. So, sacrifice, 9 leading personalities among the sages and demigods perform this yajna. Sacrifices after that were performed by the manus, human beings, and daityas, etc. In order to maintain the cosmic manifestation for all such different grades of beings, the Lord accepted the modes of nature, but personally, he has no affinity for any material quality. As Lord Vishnu maintains, so by his will, says Brahma, do I create and does Shiva destroy. He then tells Narada of his enthusiasm to take shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. Such heartfelt zeal for bhakti is the real way to associate with him in transcendental bliss, which even the Lord himself is unable to measure. Brahma, knowing well that he has achieved the status of the foremost of sages only by the mercy of the Supreme, now admits that through brain power alone, Lord Krishna cannot be understood. The only thing to be done, Brahma concludes, is to surrender to his lotus feet and offer him our respectful obeisances. Brahma goes on to glorify the Lord as he is, in his own nature, beyond the material manifestation. So, where the sacrifice is described, and now we're coming to the conclusion, Brahma's realization as a result of sacrifice, which we see very clearly, is bhakti. And bhakti manifests as zeal. Zeal means enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is a very interesting word. It comes from Greek in theos, God. You see, the spirit, the divine spirit, enters one's heart. And then one is... The Greeks used this term because they were mainly pantheists, so, you know, this theos could be anything. You know, like Kamadev, you know, he's also a deva, so one becomes enthusiastic for sex life or so on. But Brahma is specifically speaking of the supreme enthusiasm to take shelter of Lord's lotus feet. And he says to Narada, actually, brain power fails. You know, this is where explanations fail. You just have to take shelter of his lotus feet and surrender there. So, this is the actual conclusion of bhakti now coming up. So, now the last paragraph of this Adhyaya Prakashika, then he speaks of the first two Purusha incarnations and mentions different species of extraordinary beings within creation, himself included, in whom the Mahapurusha invests vibhuti, opulence, and other ideal qualities. He warns that such empowered created beings may appear to be supreme, but they're not. The chapter concludes with Brahma telling Narada that in the next chapter he will speak about the Lord's Lila avatars, because Lila Katha is full of relish and purifies the ear of its propensities to listen to the low affairs of souls conditioned by Maya. Brahma retains the narrative of the Lord's avatars in his heart forever. So this ending part is very nicely distinguishing. It's again a summary. A quick summary of what went on before. Sacrifice was described that leads us to bhakti. What is bhakti? The enthusiasm to take shelter of the Lord. The speculation of the mind stops. Jane prayasya lupasya namanja eva. There's a verse spoken by Brahma that bhakti begins when the propensity for jnana stops. That's between the discussion of Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy. That's the point where Mahaprabhu said, yes, now you're on the right track. And everything before, he said, ehobaya, that is external only. So the same thing is happening here. The sacrifice, which was also external, but it is bringing us to the internal conclusion. And then Brahma goes back. This is the logic. This is the review. This is how Vedic logic works. There's this review where Brahma just quickly summarizes the whole universe again and says, this is all the vibhuti, opulence of the Lord, his different qualities. But if you think anything else but him, you see, you pick out, say, Unati, the wife of Garudadev. She's a bird, a very beautiful bird of paradise, bodily form, with a beautiful woman's head, This is the Kanara, you see. So she had a beautiful woman's face, and then a beautiful bird body, you know, all kinds of plumage. And just looking, and you think, yes, that's the Supreme. Then Brahma here says, you're in Maya. You see, that's why he's doing this summary. And then how do we know that we're not in Maya? When we have a taste to hear of the Lord's appearances, which is why the stage was set by the sacrifice I did. You see, I just set a stage for him to come, and I always keep his lila in my heart, and therefore I am transcendental. I can stay transcendental to my own work. This is the secret. So that, again, is a little bit expanded Adhyaya Prakashika, so we can see the essential steps of logic in this chapter. So now Maharaj can take us into the details.
Shloka.
Yeah.
6.2. Chapter 6, Purushasukta confirms Shloka Anusharanam, verses summary. The first verse of chapter 6 immediately confirms that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, Sri Krishna, is the only object of sacrifice in terms of the yajna delineated by the Purushasukta hymn. Brahmadev begins his description of the Virat Purush by telling Narada about his mouth. It is the source of all voices and the abode of the fire god Agnidev, who controls the voice of every created being as the deity of that sensory facility, Nimesha.
Faculty.
Nimesha. It follows that the plan of creation is for the voice to be used in chanting the mantras for sacrifices offering into fire, the tongue of the universal form of the Lord. Similarly, his skin and six other layers, Nimesha, the seven layers are listed in full in Bhagavatam 10.2.27, generate seven kinds of Vedic hymns, and his tongue is the source of Havya Kavya. Foods offered in sacrifice and accepted by the demigods, forefathers and people in general. His nostrils are the abode of the Ashwini Kumaras, Nimesha, the physicians amongst the demigods. And all medicinal herbs are the different kinds of Vayu and Prana. And the different fragrances of the universe originate here. His eyes generate all forms. The balls of his eyes are the sun and other luminous heavenly lokas, Nimesha, as for example the moon. The directions of space originate in his ears and are the receptacles of the Vedas. The element Akash emanates from his sense of hearing, along with all kinds of sounds. The surface of his body is the shelter of Vastu, the active principle of auspicity within all articles. The wind Vayu is his skin. Every living entity's sense of touch is controlled by Vayu, and Vayu is the place of sacrifice. All vegetation, particularly the trees needed for sacrifice, originate from the hairs on his skin. From the hairs on his head and face came the clouds. Electricity, stone, and iron ore are produced from his nails. So you can see that important in the what do you call it, the Adhyaya and the Pratigya is saying is that Brahma is teaching this sacrifice. So this Purushasukta is actually, because it's about the original sacrifice, as Maharaj was saying, is that it's the primary creation in which Krishna expands into everything. But to do it, to get a result, there must be a sacrifice. But in the beginning, there isn't anything else other than Krishna. So if we want to get all the elements of the creation, then you only have Krishna to deal with. Therefore, the Purushasukta then tells how those original, the archetypical demigods, the Lord's eternal associates that were described yesterday, they then take the Lord, and by sacrificing him, then the whole, you know, the primary creation is manifest, you know, all the principles of it. Now in here it's very important, means what is brought out here, this word sacrifice suggests dedication of one's own interest for the satisfaction of a second. Right? That's very essential, because human life is meant for sacrifice. Is it yajna?
It's one of those baby
Purusha chakras. Purusha Vayagya from Chandogya.
Yeah. It's just
the human birth
is
the
meant,
human form of life is meant
for yagya. Yeah, just yagya is what a human being is supposed to do. And it's for not performing yagya that they become animals. But human being means sacrifice. So that means your activity is being done for someone else. Right? So we see, understand that. Well, it means, let's look at it from two points. One is that sacrificing another, why? For a relationship. Right? So the point is the human life is meant for relationship, proper relationship. It's not for fulfilling one's own needs, it's for relationship with other living entities. Right? Then we can see technically, or the metaphysical, then that would mean the principle of naishkarmya. Performing an activity that you're not taking the result. Does that make sense? So we connect these two, then we can see that naishkarmya is meant to develop a relationship with somebody. Right? Because yagya means it's for sacrificing for the interests of another. So that means if you're sacrificing, the sacrifice itself is the naishkarmya. Right? I'm giving up, I'm performing an activity not for myself. That's the one side. But that infers that it's being done for someone else. Does that make sense? Always remember Krishna, never forget. Right? So the always remember is that sacrificing for Krishna, never forget, means I don't desire the results of the activity. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So then we see is that this is actually the essence of everything, is sacrifice. So we see here in this first part, then it's describing how everything that there is in creation is coming from the Lord, and its connection to yagya is being shown. Right? And that's the important point. All the trees and all the herbs that's used in sacrifice, it mentions here the stone, electricity, iron, ore, all these, that's what you use these elements in the yagya, right? You have all your different spoons, your paraphernalia, it's made out of these gross elements. The clouds then give rain. From rain, then everything grows. From that, you get your grains, and that you therefore then offer in sacrifice. Does this make sense? So, what's being shown is that the Lord, He is sacrifice, right? That's one of the Bhagavad Gita mentions that He is sacrifice, and Varaha, He is the Lord of sacrifice. Right? He saves the earth; the earth is His wife. So that means the earth is meant for sacrifice, right? Because they go together. So, yeah. So we see here is that there's a direct connection here that the Bhagavatam is actually showing that purport of what the Purusha Shukta is describing. Right? That everything is to be offered to Krishna. Right? Because in the Purusha Shukta it tells about the primary creation, but directly you don't necessarily have the connection that yagya is how we're meant to always engage everything back into that person's service. That doesn't come out. Because the Purusha Shukta is for everybody, the karmis, the jnanis, the yogis, everybody. But it's actually meant, the Bhagavatam gives the real conclusion. So, okay? The Kshatriyas amongst the demigods and others who protect the people are the harvest of the fields of His mighty arms. Right? Yeah, because you're protected through food, yeah? Like that, I think it was Brigu, then Ahamannam, Ahamannam, Ahamannam. Like that. That's the end of the Brigu Vali, where he describes that I am food. Because I am food, so that means I am maintained by food, and then we are meant to be offered to, as something for someone else. This whole cycle like that. I make sacrifice, and from that sacrifice I am fed, and from that I well, you are what you eat kind of principle.
Or you see, from anamoya, pranamoya,
yes,
follows.
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah, actually, yeah, that's true.
Has to have
yeah.
good prana.
That's true. Yeah, because that actually in that section it's described as anamoya, pranamoya, manamoya, all that. That's actually, as it's going through. Okay. The Lord's virama, or forward steps, are the shelter of the three worlds.
Vikrama.
Hmm? Vikrama.
Didn't you say
I'm not sure what
virama.
I... Oh, maybe I did. Vikrama, or forward steps, are the shelter of the three worlds. They provide all necessities for life. His lotus feet are the shelter from all kinds of fear. So we see here what's necessary. So we see here is that sacrifice is necessary, protection is necessary, harvest, or let's say results of activities are necessary. And how you say, and that's being done through these demigods and then through the activity, the movement. In other words, one is maintained by movement. Does that make sense? Abhideya is the placement of maintenance. Right? Creation, maintenance, destruction. You have this element. But maintenance is also the Abhideya element. Like that. It means you can also say here is that, it means, excuse me, the previous one would be, it would put it into the third. But here, maintenance meaning that what goes on means you establish the field, you maintain the field, and then that field is going somewhere. Some result is there, right? Krishna's, I mean, Lord Chaitanya is known as Vishvambar, right? Because he maintains or nourishes the devotees. Does that make sense? So that's a very important element. You know, so we see is like the madhyamas, then that nourishment of their devotional kripa, nourishment of others, that maintenance is important. So that is provided through activity, right? That's why Krishna is telling Arjuna, if he's lazy and does nothing, nothing's going to be maintained. The world is maintained through activity. That's how Krishna's made it, right? And so therefore, then, all necessities of life come. So when you move in the path of the Lord, right, according to sacrifice, everything is maintained. Everything is taken care of. It won't be, he said, forward motion. It didn't say backwards. Right? So it didn't say motion, because then it could be any direction. It's forward motion. So forward would be towards the Lord, because forward means east. Whenever you give in the Vedas, they'll talk about something, then east means that way. Right? The priest sits down, everything is based off of east. So east means the direction he's facing. Right? Of course, naturally, if you can face east, that's ideal. But east is that way, that's forward. West is backwards. So things are offered forward, all the things go forward, the mantras go forward. When you're taking the bad elements out of the fire, they're moved backwards. Right? So that's always forward. So then it's not this any movement, but forward movement. That's so that means you're facing the deity, right? The fire is the deity. You're facing the deity. So forward means towards the deity. So when activities are going in, offered according to sacrifice, it with that progressive, mood towards Krishna, then all necessities of life are fulfilled. Does that make sense? Right. And his lotus feet are the shelter from all kinds of fear, because fear comes when you don't know relationship. So if you understand, I am situated at the Lord's lotus feet, you know who you are, you're free from fear. Is that okay? Water, semen, fertilizing agents, rains, and the Prajapatis originate in the Lord's reproductive organs. From his genitals, a heavenly pleasure that overturns the distress of having offspring pervades the bodies of all living entities. Mitra, or Yamaraj, resides in the evacuation vent of the universal form. Here and in that rectum of the Virat Purush are envy, misfortune, death, and hell.
At his back are frustration, ignorance, and immortality.
Immorality.
Immorality. Yes, that sounded that. I was thinking, immortality? Are you sure? The great rivers are his veins. The great mountains are supported by his bones. His avyakta feature is the shelter of the oceans of this universe.
Quick comment I want to make.
Yes.
In Buddhism, there's this saying, you know, like all philosophies, they can reduce everything down one sentence. So in Buddhism, the essence of Lord Buddha's teachings is Mahasamudra, the great ocean. There's all, you know, nirvana, whatever. But it's just interesting that the avyakta feature is
the support of the ocean.
Yeah, support the ocean. Yeah, so we even have, you know, Buddhism.
Yes. Well, I mean, we got everything else here. We got frustration, ignorance, immorality. We might as well have Buddhism too, right?
It's all there.
Did you catch that? Yeah. Avyakta means unmanifest. So the Buddhists are into unmanifest, right? Because I say the Brahman, you could say, is a manifestation. But the Buddhists are into just void, unmanifest, nothing. So he's saying that, and the ocean is held up by that unmanifest potency, right? And then Buddhism, they talk about the essence is that the ocean.
Yeah. And Prabhupada says that's where they go.
Yeah.
If any of them achieve nirvana, it means just they've entered the causal ocean.
Yeah.
Mahasamudra.
They'll just go into the, yeah.
So it all hangs up here.
Right? You see, so there's always a connection. There's nothing that's not connected to Krishna in some way. Does that make sense now? Yeah. Yes.
You said once that the Gauravag mud holds up, the Gauravag mud is where they end up, and
yeah.
The Gauravag mud holds up the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, you get stuck in the Garbhodak mud because it's really dark, you know, so you feel there's nothing happening. Very quiet, dark, probably quite cozy, right? Won't get too cold, too hot, you know. In his belly are the materially annihilated living entities, right? Because when he breathes in, then they all enter back in, like that.
So what's the big deal about all this Buddhist meditation? Just wait till the Mahapralaya and you get it anyway.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about that, about you getting it, is you have all these different subtle, because Krishna mentions that, is it? Raga, Vita, Bhaya,
Kroda.
Yeah, it means you have the raga attachment, fear, and anger. So then, all these are preliminary things. So the manifest universe, then we see attachment is there, and they are absorbed in that. When in the Vasudev Sattva, when the Mahatattva is manifest, then all living entities are actually on the platform of that merged in Brahman. Because, but then they're thinking, I am God, because I am, said there, I am the, what is it? I and mine. They get the, what was that? It is I, it is mine. Right? That's what they're thinking. So, you have this whole, it means the Mahatattva is just pervaded with unlimited living entities are all sitting there and thinking, it is I, it is mine. Right? That's so, they're actually on the Brahman platform in Brahman realization. Like that. And then after that they manifest here. And then when these two you find dissatisfaction, then anger creates just wanting to obliterate everything. And so every living entity gets that when Mahavishnu, you know, breathes in, or anything, even at the end of the day of Brahma, all the living entities go and reside back in the how you say, the belly of the Lord. So then they're also that state of voidness, that annihilated state. So the living entity experiences all, because they're not conscious there, right? It's like the deep sleep is just unconscious. While in the Mahatattva, they're conscious, but they think it's polluted consciousness, it is mine.
then it is manifest here in this world. Does that make sense? So living entity, you know, every, you know, breath of Mahavishnu tastes all three of these. So it's not that it's Buddhism has something special to offer. I mean, you just have to, like Maharaj said, just wait for the Lord to breathe in. And then if you're into impersonalism, just wait a little longer when he, you know, glances out. You know, then, you know, Hari Bol. And then, you know, give it a little bit more time, and then there'll be some activity too. You know, 311 trillion years of some activity before, you know, it all disappears again. Like that. Okay.
You can just finish this.
Okay. The intelligent know that the subtle bodies of all living entities are sheltered in his heart, because the subtle is all your desire, what you feel, so that's your emotions. The religious principles observed by great authorities like Brahma, the four Kumaras, and Narad Muni are produced from his consciousness. Right? So religious principles are the external, are the gross manifestation of the consciousness of the Lord, which is the abode of truth and transcendental knowledge. Okay, so then we'll end here and continue. We'll continue on Friday. Because I think for the Vyas Puja, Devadatta Maharaj's Vyas Puja, he's giving Bhagavatam class at 6 in the morning, and then some other, that and other programs continue right up to 8, then there'll be darshan of the deities at 8 and all that. So just on Thursday, neither the Mahabharata or the Srimad Bhagavatam class will run, and will continue as normal on Friday.
So Thursday is Avyakta.
Yes, Thursday is Avyakta, so anyone looking for some Buddhistic time for sleep here is Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhakta Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premirandi, Hari Hari Gaura, Gaura Hari Gaura.